In the name of Lord Jesus Christ, I share a message this morning with everyone. This quarter, our senior class is studying Book of Romans. And as there are only three of us in senior class, and as each teacher, you know, study Book of Romans, we realize that we each learn a lot from preparation of our lesson. I know last week, Lena shared the message about offering your life as a living sacrifice. And I heard that message was very inspiring. And that's part of our curriculum. And today, I'm going to share my portion of Book of Romans. And my part, I was assigned to teach, you know, chapter 9 through 12. That is, the topic was God's sovereign choices. Let's turn to Book of Romans, chapter 9. If you use NIV Bible, you'll see the topic right before chapter 9 is God's sovereign choices. And in this portion of the letter, Paul explained to the recipient about God's salvation plan. And as part of that salvation plan, it talks about the saving the Jews and the Gentile alike. Although the order are different, you know, through a different timing, and among that explain, while he was trying to explain the whole thing, he quoted one verse from the Old Testament, and that verse is only quoted once in the entire New Testament, and that the verse he quoted to explain God's sovereign choices is Exodus chapter 33, verse 19. And that verse, according to Romans chapter 9, it was quoted in chapter 9, verse 15, when he talked about, when he tried to answer and explain God's sovereign choices, he said, number 14, Romans chapter 9, verse 14, "What then shall we say? Is God unjust? Not at all, for he said to Moses, 'I will have mercy on whom I have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I have compassion.'" When I come across this explanation and answer, I asked the senior class one question. I said, "Does that answer all your doubts and confusion? Does this verse explain a lot?" And there was a silence in the classroom. And then one student said, finally, he said, he was being very honest. He said, "This verse does not explain anything." And I said, "You are right. And I thank you for being so honest." Because when someone questioned God, "Why you save him first, save me last? And how about the remnants? Why you do this?" And you saw, by if you follow through, if you read through Paul's letter, you know Paul is a very logical person. Whenever he explains something, he is very precise and logical. You can almost see the bullet points, you know, in outlined in his answer, point 1, 2, 3, 4. But when it comes to God's sovereign choice, this is how Paul answer. He said, basically, the answer is God get to do whatever he choose to do. That is so interesting. We never thought God in this perspective. It was at that point I realized that I do not understand. The verses quoted here, the verses God spoke to Moses, "I will have mercy on whom I have mercy." I do not understand. Usually a person will not quote a verse if he did not understand that verse himself. Apparently, Paul understood this verse very clearly. So when it comes to explaining this, he only quoted one verse, and that was this exact verse that he chose. So now, today, we're going to study. Since I did not understand, we're going to study together. And hopefully, at the end of study, all of us will come to an understanding of this verse. Before we can go start this, let's start from the Old Testament first. When we study Bible, whether it's Old Testament or New Testament, after you study for a while, then you'll realize that there is a consistent theme throughout the entire Bible. Now, I'm not talking about small points, you know. I'm talking about a very large theme that's consistently you know, throughout all the message got repeated over and over and over and over again. To me, that theme that I could see is, I am the Lord. Why I feel this way? If you read the Old Testament passages, you will see that throughout lives after life, throughout the history after different kingdom, the rise and the fall of the kingdom, you will see at the conclusion of a person's life or the conclusion of each kingdom, God will say, I will show them, or I will show him, I am the Lord. And that message is consistently throughout the Old Testament, and we'll talk about New Testament later. You will see that. And what is the usage of I'm the Lord? For example, in Genesis chapter 17, when God first called Abraham, at the very beginning of his calling, we need to flip to a lot of verses, so I'll tell you which verse to flip, and the rest of them I'll just read them to you to save time. At the beginning of God's calling to Abraham, God did not introduce himself at that point. If you turn to Genesis chapter 4, around that area, when God appeared to Abraham, he gave him a job instruction right away. Leave this place and go to another place, which I'm going to give it to you. If you look at the content of that instruction, there's no introduction. Go, who am I? Go, you do this. And as God appeared and reappeared to him, God encouraged him. Throughout the time, he had never introduced himself. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 17. However, let's Genesis chapter 17. Genesis chapter 17, verse 1. All these years have passed. Abraham experienced many things, you know, in his youthful year. During the famine, he went to Egypt, and God, you know, used his power to save Sarah from the king Amalek. And all that years have passed. When Abraham finally reached 99 years old, at this point, when Abraham was 99 years old, all these years he's been waiting for God's promise. And for the third time, God, the Lord appeared to him again. Look at the context. See, what the Lord said in this time is very different. He said, at the beginning of the statement, he said, I am God Almighty. Walk before me. Now he introduced himself. After 99 years of struggles, ups and downs in his life, God tell him, at this point, he still did not have a son. He'd been waiting for, but he still did not receive it. At the lowest point in his life, God appeared to him and tell him, who am I? I am Lord, the Almighty God. What does that mean? Okay, let's put this passage aside. Let's look at another life. At the end of this, we're going to put all the lives together. It's just like putting all the puzzles together and see if together as a group, can we see a picture among all these pieces. So now let's put the first piece aside, Abraham's life. Let's look at Moses' life. In Exodus chapter 33, let's have our Bible flip to that for now. But we don't need to look at that verses. We are all familiar with Moses' life, you know, the ups and downs in his life. And some people felt, you know, at the point when he led the Israelites cross the Red Sea, that was a climax of his faith, you know. He personally witnessed God's power. And we were going, wow, that is very amazing. However, it was the lowest point of Moses' journey of faith. After he came down from Mount Sinai, he was so joyful, and he was about to pass that two tablets of the Ten Commandments to Israelites. But what he encountered was the worshiping of golden calf. At that point, he totally was totally broken. If you put yourself in Moses' shoes, you will be as confused as he is, that what is the purpose of all this? Why did God give me these two tablets? Since he probably already knew that people are worshiping golden calf at the bottom of the Mount Sinai. So what am I doing? All these years leading, all the trouble, the toils, you know, leading Israelites out of Egypt, you know, fighting with King Pharaohs and all that, the dangers and all that. Now at the bottom, he felt he couldn't see beyond, you know, this. And it was at this point, God appeared to him. When God appeared to him, let's read chapter 33, Exodus chapter 33, verse 19. Let's take it from verse 19. And the Lord said, I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you. At this point, God said, I'm going to appear to you. You will see my image. Now you could picture this in your head. This is what he said. I will cause my goodness to pass in front of him. As he passed in front of him, he will make one declaration. And he said, I will proclaim my name. I will introduce myself, my name, okay? And then he said, the Lord, that's my name. In your presence, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I have compassion, you cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live. You could picture this as God passing in front of him. He wanted to associate a part of his divine character and teach Moses. Which part of divine character he want Moses to associate that image with? It is this divine character that he says specifically here. I will have mercy on whom I have mercy. What does that mean? Which part of divine character that God want to show to Moses? It is the part of his sovereignty. Can you see that? When his image passed in front of Moses, he want Moses to see his sovereignty. That is associated to that image at that point. And we knew what happened to Moses after Moses, you know, after this incident, Moses continued his work and he went up to Sinai again and continued and was able to complete his job. Now we're going to put this piece of puzzle, put this character aside. Just now we studied Abraham, Moses. Now we're going to look at the third character here. That is Prophet Elijah. We are all familiar with Prophet Elijah's story, that how he prayed for the fire to come down to burn the living sacrifices. And a lot of people, again, thought that was the climax of his faith, just like Moses. When he, you know, in God's name, parted the Red Sea, you know, that was the climax of faith. When Prophet Elijah witnessed the fire descend from the heaven and burn off all the sacrifices, wow, in front of the multitude, in front of all the people, that was a climax of his faith. However, after that, out of fear, again, when Queen Jezreel threatened to kill his life, again, he became so frightened. He did not understand if God, the Almighty God, could, you know, do such a wonder, why can he, you know, do something very obviously to protect my life in front of the threat, in the face of the Jezebel's threat. Now, let's turn to 1 Kings chapter 19. After running for 40 days, during that long journeys, you know, he ran without stop, and angel came to comfort him, gave him water and bread, and then he continued. It was when he reached his destination, when he was in the cave, you know, 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 11. It was at that point the Lord appeared to him. But the Lord's message is very interesting. He said to him, the Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. This is the second character. Now, we have studied this morning. Same thing. The Lord is going to appear to him at this point of his life. And And what follows this is that then a great and powerful wind tore the mountain apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake, verse 12. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elisha heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, "What are you doing here, Elisha?" It was when God appeared to him, God asked him, "What are you doing in your life? If you understand the Lord is the Lord in your life, if you understand God's sovereignty, what are you doing here?" Let's put the story aside. Let's look at the four characters. It actually takes that many pieces to see a message, okay? You'll see it. The process is kind of long, but at the end, you'll see it. We come to the fourth one? Am I on the fourth one now? Sorry, I couldn't find my slides. I was gonna project the orders on the slides, but I'm not a very technical person. I couldn't find that file, you know? But, so now the fourth one, King Solomon. A lot of us, when we look at King Solomon's life, you know, sometimes, you know, we feel so sad for him. You know, as Book of Ecclesiastes is filled with his regrets, you know, vanity after vanity, you know, with our heart filled with sorrow when we look at his life, go, wow, how could a life come to this kind of conclusion? But today I'm going to study his life in a different light. At the conclusion of Book of Ecclesiastes, although at the beginning he said with his useful life, with his wisdom and intelligence, you know, he had tried many things and nothing satisfied him. However, at the conclusion of the Book of Ecclesiastes, let's turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Chapter 12 is the concluding chapter of the entire book. After regret, another regret. Chapter 12, verse 1. At the closing of his life, at his old age, he says something very beautiful. With all his wisdom and experience in his life, he said, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth." He might not recognize God is the Lord in his life, but he did come to that understanding at the end of his life that the most important thing in your life is remember he is your Creator. And if you look further at the concluding verses, that verse 13, at the very ending of chapter 12. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. After so many chapters, you know, fear God and keep his commandments. He did come to that real acknowledgement that the Lord is the God of his life. God is the Lord of his life. So let's put this aside. Fifth character. There are three more characters. We are almost there. Now let's look at the fifth character, the life of Job. When we look at life of Job, sometimes we go, wow, how can a person so righteous, you know, be tested in this harsh way? What is God's purpose? You know, I understand if a person do evil, if they fall astray, God want to bring them back through, you know, trials, you know. So now when we look at Job's life is very different than that of Moses, Abraham. With Abraham, God has, his life is very different. His situation is very different. With Moses, apparently God have a task for him. With Elijah, God has a job for him. Solomon, God gave him wisdom and he fall astray. Now with Job, he go, I don't see anything could have possibly gone wrong with his life. And if you look at the nature of his trial, it's more severe than that of Solomon and it surpassed all other character. Why did God do that? What is that purpose? Now let's look at Job, chapter 42 and verse 5. At the ending part of book of Job, although Job, he says something, a timeless message. Job said, "My ears have heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you." This is a verse that all of us are very familiar when we talk about book of Job. That's that one single verse will ring out from the back of your mind. My ears have heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you. Huh. So what is the purpose of all these trials? Let's put this aside. About 500 before the birth of Christ. It is during Nebuchadnezzar's reign that the Judah kingdom came to an end. And at this point, we go, well, it's been prophesied through so many prophets that Judah kingdom will come to an end because of their disobedience to the Lord. So as a reader today, we go, well, that does not surprise me. But you got to recognize that at that point, something very important happened. Because Judah kingdom is the last kingdom that fall. Another 10 tribe is the Israel kingdom that fell many years before that. So at this point, when Nebuchadnezzar captured Jerusalem, that means starting from this point of history, God's chosen nation disappear from the face of the earth and the history. Do you understand the impact of this? At this point, at the point when Nebuchadnezzar captured, conquered, burned down East Jerusalem, at this point, God's chosen people disappear. They were, you know, captured. They were taken, captivated, and taken to a foreign city. At this point, God's chosen people and nation disappear, cease to exist in the history. And starting from this point, the focus of the Bible, God's attention, turn from the chosen people to the Gentile nation. Can you see the shift of the focus here? That prior to this, you know, in the First King, Second King, First Chronicles, Second Chronicle, Samuel's Judges, you know, all these books, the entire attention and the focus is all on God's chosen people. When it comes to Gentile, sometimes you come across a couple of Gentile character. It's just like a background character. Those are not any importance, but that 99% of attention is all about the rise and the fall of God's chosen people. But at this point, that attention has been shifted. Because the chosen people and the nation ceased to exist anymore. And that took place approximately 500 years before the birth of Christ. Nebuchadnezzar was the first Gentile king that took over and become the center of focus in the Bible and also from God's perspective. And it is through this Gentile king, something very interesting happened. Let's turn to Daniel's chapter 4. Actually, originally I was going to quiz you. I was going to read this to you. Okay. To the people, nation, and men of every language who live in all the world, may you prosper greatly. It is my pleasure to tell you about the miraculous signs and wonder that the Most High God had performed for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonder, his kingdom is an eternal kingdom. His dominion endures from generation to generation. Originally, I was going to ask all of you, who made that proclamation? Can you believe it? It's actually spoken by a Gentile king, Nebuchadnezzar. By looking at the context of this proclamation, you would think that this is made from a person who loves God and follows God deeply. Who is deeply convicted to the Lord. But it is not. This statement is made by King Nebuchadnezzar. Prior to chapter 4, every time when he referred to the Lord, he always said Daniel's God or your God. But it was a book of chapter 4. Nebuchadnezzar came to recognize that the Lord is no longer Daniel's Lord. It's my God. And his kingdom is directly going to relate to me. It's going to be affecting me because it's my God, my Lord in my life. Why did he come to this realization? I'm just going to give you a quick review that after 7 years, when he was cast out from the palace, one day when he was, walking around his palace, he has this, if you study history, Babylon's kingdom was very, very powerful and glorious in his time. Even in the vision that Daniel dreamed of, that big giant person that start with the golden, the head of gold and the chest of silver. And that head of gold is actually a Babylon kingdom, head of gold, the most glorious, a kingdom that is filled with gold and glorious and victories. And that is Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. And it was at that point that, according to the history and the Bible, recorded in Book of Daniel, he was cast out from the palace, and he lost his sanity, and he lived among the wild like a beast. He grazed the grass and lived as a wild animal until for 7 years. Until one day, that when his timing is up, he lifted up his eyes and he looked into the heaven, and it was when his sanity was restored and he returned to the palace. And this statement was spoken after that experience. It was recorded in Book of Daniel. After that, although many things happened in his life, King Nebuchadnezzar is known of his brutality. He's a very, very brutal king. He does not have all this, good virtues and quality. Many things happened, but it was at near the end of his life and his reign that he came to this realization that God is the Lord in his life. And because of that recognition, he made this proclamation, said, it is my pleasure. It is my pleasure. See how kind he is. May all of you, may you prosper greatly. This is totally different than his character prior to this incident. And it is my pleasure to tell you about God, his miraculous sign, his kingdom, his eternity. That is very amazing. That's King Nebuchadnezzar. Now we're going to come to the final character in the Old Testament. That is Ezekiel. Ezekiel is Prophet Daniel's contemporary. They live in the same time period. While Daniel served in the royal court, Prophet Ezekiel live among the exile in Babylon. So they are in the same time period. Some Bible scholar commented that Book of Ezekiel is like a revelation in the Old Testament. If you have time, you read through Book of Ezekiel, it's filled with prophecy. And that prophecy, since at this point, just like what I mentioned to you, at this point, the Israel kingdom already ended. There's no more chosen nation. So Ezekiel's prophecy covers all the way till the ending of the human history, to the future, covering our time. We are living in that fulfillment of the prophecy spoken by Prophet Ezekiel. So that's why a lot of people said that Ezekiel is the book of Revelation in the Old Testament. And Revelation, it has same effect. Something, if you have time, it probably will take you several months to finish reading Book of Ezekiel. When you read Book of Ezekiel, take a marker, a very bright color, like a neon color. When you come across this phrase, you highlight it. And then after you highlight it, you count it and tell me how many times it appears. There is a phrase that appear over and over and over in a way that has not seen in other books in the Old Testament. Let's turn to Ezekiel chapter 37. Let me give you just one example, and you could do that by yourself. This one example that I'm going to give it to you is chapter 37, Ezekiel chapter 37. When prophet Ezekiel dreamed about the valley of dry bones, this is a very interesting vision. And this is a vision that all of us are familiar, that in which, in this vision, I'm just going to give you a quick recap. In this vision, he saw the valley filled with the dead bone that was a lot of them, you know, just not just one or two. And when you look at the dead bone, it seems like the bone has been dead for a long time, to the point that it's all dried, you know. There's no signs of, definitely, you cannot see any signs of life in the pile of dead bone. And it is in this vision, God revealed to him that my spirit will breathe in the bone and bring life again from these piles of dead bone. Now, let's read chapter 37, 13. Chapter 37, verse 13. At the end of this vision, the Lord said, "Then you, my people, will know that I am the Lord." Whenever you see this, then you will know that I am the Lord. In book of Ezekiel, you highlight it with a highlighter. I counted it. It actually, how many chapters is this? Book of Ezekiel. It actually appeared approximately 50 times. 50 times, which is very unusual. You don't see that in any other books. What does that mean? When can you begin to see a continuous message, a theme from Genesis till the end of the chosen nation? The theme has never altered. And that theme carry on through different characters in different time period, whether it's Jewish or Gentile, all the way even beyond, even when the chosen nation has ended, even in prophet Ezekiel's prophecy, when he prophesies about the future and the end of the human history, that theme is so dominant, so clear. And what is that message? So that people will know, I am the Lord. Why is that? In the New Testament time, it changed a little bit, but the message is still the same. For example, let's look at Paul's life in Acts chapter 9, verse 5. On the way to Damascus, while Paul was called Saul, at the time did not know God at all, he was persecuting a Christian. And when he was shown by this big light and he fell from, he was laid on the floor, let's read Acts chapter 9, verse 5. He was obviously very confused. Chapter 9, verse 5. Then he heard a voice said to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" It was at this point, he goes, "Who are you?" And then Saul asked, "Why are you, Lord?" And then the voice answered, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting." You are all familiar with this phrase, but now let's look at this phrase one more time. The answer said, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting." This statement is very different than all other statements in the Old Testament time. In the Old Testament time, when the Lord appeared to people, he always introduced him first by saying, "I am the Lord." And then the message, "I am the Lord," and the message throughout. You could see that pattern throughout the Old Testament. However, when the voice replied, when Saul was very confused at the time, going, "Who is this voice? Who are you?" He only gave him a name, Jesus. He never said, I am the Almighty Lord that you are persecuting. This is, you know, he only gave him a very simple name, Jesus. It was later that Paul came to realization of who Jesus is. Let's turn to Colossians chapter 1, verse 15. Through the seeking, because of God's mercy, he came to this understanding. And what is his understanding of Jesus? Nothing could tell you more clear than what Paul said in Colossians chapter 1. He, referring Jesus, is the image of the invisible God. Paul probably did not understand who is Jesus at the time, but during the ups and down, events after events, you know, a lot of things happened in his life. He came to realize that Jesus is the invisible, is the image of the invisible God. And that realization is very, very important. Now, we have gone through all the characters in the Old Testament. Can you remember all? Can you take this home and think about it? But when we're going to try, whatever we could see together, we'll try to do that. But do not let this stop at this point. Bring that home and think about it. Why is that? When we put all these characters together, what can you see? Sometimes in our journey of faith, you will experience God's love, right? That sounds familiar. Or you may have experienced God's faithfulness, God's mercy, God's forgiveness, right? We each experience different things. When a person experiences God's love, a certain part of your heart will change. A very specific part of your heart will change. Once a person experiences God's love, that's when you can love others. Before that, you couldn't. Doesn't matter how hard you try. You know, you squeeze out every strength. You just couldn't. When a person experiences God's mercy, another part of your heart, a very specific another part that is different than the part that we mentioned about, will change. When you experience God's mercy, you will be able to look at people around you with a merciful heart. And that part is different than the first part that was changed. When a person experiences God's forgiveness, that's when, at that point, another part changes again. That's how you can forgive others. Now, with that in mind, when a person experiences God's sovereignty, which part of your heart will be changed? The direction of your life will be changed. It's different than when you experience God's forgiveness and faith. And when a person experiences that God is the Lord of your life, the purpose of your life will be changed. But before that, you know, no one can change the direction of your life. So does everyone need to come to realization that God is the Lord of your life, not just a lot of us, we understand, oh, God is the creator of the earth, which is very different than God is the creator of my life. Can you see the difference? Once you could experience that, then you're going to experience what Elijah experienced, that what am I doing with my life? The voice said to him, stand in my presence. And the first question he asked him is, what are you doing here? Then you're going to go, oh, what am I doing? I believe that not only the one who has very high spirituality should experience or witness God's presence. Everyone. If you look at in your mind, if you review Nebuchadnezzar's life, whether it's a Gentile king, Solomon, doesn't matter at which part of his life he come to the realization that God is the Lord in my life. The key point is he came to realize that and acknowledge that. Only when a person came to acknowledge that, he has part with God's eternity. prior to that, you have no part. You have no part. So it's very important that each one of us need to come to that point. And once you experience that, your life will be changed. Yeah, can you see that? So bring this home and continue to think about it in that direction. A lot of you will say, yes, I want to experience that, but I can't, you know. I just cannot experience that. Why is that? From my personal experience, I feel some of it is from the understanding of His word, but a big portion of it, go back to our topic today, it depends on God's mercy. And if you don't understand this verse, you're going to go, well, the verse said, I will have mercy on whom? So maybe God just did not choose me. Then you are wrong. Your understanding of this verse is wrong, because it's God's general will. Under the umbrella of that general will, it is His general will that He wants everyone to be saved. So you need to understand this verse together with that general will, that He wants everyone without exception to be saved, and He will have mercy. We just need to seek after His mercy, and He will be found. Whether it's in Old Testament time or in the New Testament time. May God bless all of you.